You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media
News
app.
I'm Dave Packard. 17 more truckloads of humanitarian aid got into Gaza today, with 40 more trucks proposed for tomorrow. That announcement from United Nations World Food Program Director Cindy McCain in Amman, Jordan, telling ABC's This Week they have a team on the ground that tracks and traces the supplies to make sure they're going to civilians and not Hamas.
We do the very best we can to make sure that it does go to the right people.
McCain says the situation's dire and the area needs many more truckloads of aid. Meanwhile, Israel's stepping up its attacks on the Gaza Strip. In preparation for the next stage of its war on Hamas, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin saying when the ground incursion starts,
I think you'll see a fight that's characterized by a lot of IEDs, a lot of booby traps, and just really grinding activity going forward.
There's concern that a ground invasion could make Hamas less willing to release hostages. This is ABC News. New developments in the manhunt for a suspected killer. The car that was last seen driven by the suspect who allegedly killed a Maryland circuit court judge has been found, but authorities say the suspect, 49-year-old Pedro Argate, is still at large. Argate is wanted in connection with the targeted attack on a Maryland judge who presided over his child custody case. A major university is apologizing after a picture of Adolf Hitler was shown on a scoreboard before a football game. ABC's Brian Clark has more.
A little more than an hour before kickoff of Saturday's game between Michigan and Michigan State University, a trivia quiz on the large video boards inside of Michigan State's Spartan Stadium included a photo of Adolf Hitler. The university's apologized, saying it's deeply sorry. It put the blame on a third-party source and says it will not use that vendor going forward and will implement stronger screening and approval procedures. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Dave Packer, ABC News.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A report from the U.S. Defense Department finds 245 of its 275 installations are close to groundwater sources. That includes the West Bend Armory in Wisconsin. With more now, here's Edwin J. Vieira.
A new report finds plumes of so-called forever chemicals from Department of Defense installations are located dangerously close to groundwater sources. Cleanup is underway on the majority of them, with remediation plans for the others being developed. Jared Hayes with the Environmental Working Group describes where the chemicals came from.
The primary source of PFAS into the groundwater coming from these bases has been the historic use of firefighting foam containing PFAS, known as AFFF. These foams were used for decades, primarily to put out oil and gas fires or aviation fires.
He explains these foams were washed off the tarmac and into the soil, where they could leach into groundwater supplies. Several methods, such as granular activated carbon and reverse osmosis, have shown success in removing PFAS from drinking water, but they don't break down these chemicals. New regulations have been proposed by the Environmental Protection Agency to keep people safe from PFAS. The National Primary Drinking Water Regulation would establish maximum containment levels for numerous forever chemicals. Hayes says this is important since there are numerous health impacts to ingesting PFAS.
Long-term exposure through drinking water, PFAS has been linked to development of different types of cancer. cancer. It has also been linked to immune system harms, raised cholesterol, as well as birth defects.
This is Edwin J. Vieira. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripescast. This is the podcast where I talk to people for and or from the Midwest. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and we are brought to you by Charlie Good Soda. Hey, folks, how you doing? Welcome to a new episode of the Cripescast. Before we dive into things, just a couple notes off the top. First, if it sounds a little different, that's because I'm doing this Cripescast from the road. We had a lot of great shows down south, down south for being from up north, Kansas City, Springfield, Wichita, Evansville, a lot of fun. Thank you for coming out. We're going to be up in Rochester, Minnesota this week. So all those tickets are on charliebehrens.com or cripescast.com. You can just click on the thing. Before we dive into today's episode, which is an interview with my buddy Jeff Ditzenberger, it's his second time on the Cripescast. He was on the Farmers episode. I just want to give a plug for Doctors Without Borders. And I'm sure many of you have been watching the tragic news over the past couple of weeks. The violence in the Middle East, obviously, is nothing new. It's been going on for decades. But, you know, the loss of civilian life over the past week has been nothing short of heartbreaking. And that civilian death toll may be exponentially higher in the next few days, depending on what happens in the Gaza Strip. And with all that said, it's easy to feel like you can't do anything. But one thing you can do is donate to Doctors Without Borders. They've got a great track record. For those of you who don't know, they're an organization that basically seeks to give humanitarian and healthcare aid around the world to places that need it most. Specifically on this situation, they've said, quote, they're actively working on preparing medical and humanitarian supplies to be sent to Gaza when access is open. And we are reiterating calls for the delivery of humanitarian aid into Gaza, including via the Rafah crossing. MSF calls for the urgent establishment of safe spaces and safe passage for civilians trapped in Gaza. The wounded and sick must receive medical care. Medical facilities and personnel must be protected and respected. Hospitals and ambulances are not targets. From Palestine and Israel to Sudan and Ukraine, civilians and hospitals should never be a target of war. End quote. And can't agree with that sentiment more. And it's a tough situation. So if you are looking for ways to do something productive with sort of whatever your feelings are, look to Doctors Without Borders. They are a great organization. Yeah. So check that out. Link for that in the show notes. Now turning to today's podcast, I am joined in this intro by Colleen Maraca in the Cripescast studio. How are you doing, Colleen?
I'm good. I'm feeling like large and in charge in the big seat.
I see how you're sitting in my seat there.
Squatter's rights. And as far as I'm concerned, finders keepers, losers weepers. So sound off in the comments if you think I should take over the Cripescast. Let me know.
So much respect. So much respect that we have for our elders at Cripes Media.
Yeah.
Well, today we've got buddy Jeff, who came into the studio a couple weeks ago now. And we chit-chatted about a few other, there's a few other very important issues. And that is mental health Specifically as it pertains to farmers and to veterans. Jeff is both a farmer and a veteran. He knows how to speak both of those languages. And he's going to tell us a little bit about his story, a little bit about Tugs, the organization that he works with, that he started. We're going to get into what it is and, you know, kind of the hardships that farmers have had as of late in this podcast. And yeah, it's going to be a very good conversation to have, especially for mental health awareness. And a lot of people can resonate with that. Before we dive in, Colleen, any other things going on in the world of cripes that we should let the folks at home know about?
Well, so this weekend you're going to Rochester, Minnesota, which you already kind of on the top. And then after that, you have Manitowoc. And then after that, you got Burnsville in early November, Marshfield, Houghton, Michigan, Fish Creek and Reedsburg. These are all up on the online. And then we have more dates coming in December. So if you want to see Charlie live, go there. Go to cripescast.com/tour.
So anyways, without further ado, should we just dive into the conversation with Ditz?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's get to my conversation with Jeff Ditzenberger.
How's it going, Ditz?
It's going good, Charlie. How are you?
Good. Nice to have you back on the Cripescast.
This is really cool. This is like way cooler than the last place we did this.
Well, no, last place was on your farm. That was fun.
Yeah, but this is, I didn't even know if I was at the right place first. I had to call Colleen to make sure that I was actually.
Why? Because I haven't cut my grass?
Well, that too. But I mean, I get it if you're trying to be environmentally friendly or whatever. But yeah. I'm like, looks like a house.
So. Yeah, it is a house. I do have to cut the grass. That's not even environmentally friendly. That's not even low maintenance. That's just laziness at this point.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Plus, there was no reserve for Ditz parking, so I was a little disappointed. Well,
couldn't you just pull right in the drive?
I mean, I could have after I found out, but I was already past it, and I didn't want to get lost on all the one-way streets
You got the Milwaukee experience today.
Definitely.
Just to give people backstory, we met through Pam.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous Farm Babe.
Fabulous Farm Babe. And this was, I believe, I want to say like episode 11 or something. And we did the farmers.
17.
Ah, better memory than me.
Okay. So I had a couple of people that asked me about it yesterday and I had to.
You had to show them it.
Yeah. I mean, no, I remembered it because I have a brain like an elephant.
Yeah, that's good. I don't. You were on there and we had several other Wisconsin farmers. Mm-hmm. So, but let's, you know, kind of for the folks who don't know yet, who aren't aware, who aren't longtime OG Cripescast listeners, let's give them kind of the long story short of you, your work in the military and your work with mental health and farming, you know, the brief synopsis, if you will, to catch everyone up.
Excellent. So as you can tell by my voice, I'm 23 years old. You know, I've been farming for like 2 years.
You don't look a day over 24, dude.
But no, grew up in a small town in southern Wisconsin, South Wayne, about 430 people there, except on the weekends, and there was 425. grew up on a dairy farm. Went to high school there, got out of high school. Went in the military because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Plus, there might have been an incident with my dad's truck that got me in a little bit of trouble. And then was in the military for 4 years, Operation Desert Storm. In the Navy, I was on a big ship. I mean, a huge, second largest displacement ship next to an aircraft carrier. Size of Camp Randall, for those of you that are in Wisconsin, gives you an idea how big it is. More people on that ship than was in my hometown. And then after I got out of the military, came back to Wisconsin, worked a couple of different ag-related jobs, got into actually agricultural sales, machinery sales for quite some time. But I've always had the farming part of my blood. I like to see crops grow, like to be out in tractors, you know, having that huge machine at your fingertips and hands to, you know, put seed in the ground blindly and have some faith and hope that, you know, Mother Nature and the good Lord himself will come and give you some rain and stuff to nurture that and get it to grow. And then dairy farmed for a while with my now ex-wife, who I'm actually really good friends with. And it's kind of interesting because when you talk about my work with mental health, the way we met was after I had actually been trying to sell her family some equipment, farm equipment. And then I knew her and her husband were going to be taking over the farm eventually. So of course I was trying to get on their good side. Her husband died by suicide. And I heard about it through the news, went out there to help out. It was the middle of winter and stuff, and just kind of hung out there for 16 years.
And then, as it goes.
But it was, I think it was, her name is Marie, and I think it was her husband's suicide that was probably one of those that kind of was a turning point for me that, okay, farmers as a whole aren't very well connected to, you know, things that are going on in the big cities. They don't have access to healthcare and that kind of stuff. I was still selling machinery. There was a lot of times where the conversation in a barn or the conversation at a farmer's table would turn into, I just don't know if I can do this anymore. And I just got to the point, Charlie, where I was tired of burying friends for, you know, reasons that could have been prevented. You know, I always say, you know, suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And so I had my own suicide attempt in 1994, actually committed a felony in the process of doing that. But I was less embarrassed of saying that I had screwed up and lit this old abandoned house on fire to try to end my life than I was of admitting that I had had mental problems or emotional problems, because God forbid if men should talk about their feelings. And waited until 2014, wrote a blog about men and farmers and mental health for Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. They printed it. It went viral. Not like COVID viral, but viral. And anyways, ended up speaking at Madison Dane County's Safe Communities Guys Night Out. And that's where the idea that night is actually where the idea for my nonprofit TUGS, which stands for Talking, Understanding, Growing, and Supporting. That's where that came from.
TUGS right here on the hat.
On the hat.
And so that's kind of the long story. And what's the analogy of the tugboat?
So the ship that I was on, like I said, was the largest, second largest displacement ship next to an aircraft carrier. And we couldn't steer ourselves when it was, you know, trying to come back into port or come home. Or if you break down in the middle of the ocean, which does happen, you know, you got to have some way to get back. And, you know, you can't call a tow truck, you call a tugboat. And you can't see the little tugboat, but you can hear his little tooty horn and little puffs of smoke. And the part that I found the most interesting was that when we would come back into port and they would push us back in to dock, it would go super quiet. And we used to joke, like, it was so quiet you could hear the fish eat the barnacles off the outside of the hull. And then you feel this little bump and you know you're moving, but you're like, what's this magical force that's moving me? And then you feel another little bump. And then there was this magical box that had this voice come across it. It was like Land of the Oz. Actually, it was the captain. But anyways, who would say, you know, hey, we're back. I'll paraphrase. Hey, we're back in port safe. For those of you that, you know, don't have to work, go see your family. The rest of you, sorry, you know, chow's at 6.
Right.
But the whole thing about it was, Charlie, is you just had this sense of calm and peace. And I was thinking about that when I was giving my speech that night in Madison. And I was like, holy cow, why can't life be like this? Like, what if you're a big ship out in the middle of the ocean and you can't go anywhere, or you need to get home safe, or you just need to find that safe place? What if you could call a tugboat? And so basically, on the way home that night, I said to my friend Scott, I go, dude, I want to start a nonprofit. And he's like, well, you already farm. And I was like, no, like I want to do something that has less government regulation. And oh my God, have you ever filled out the paperwork for a nonprofit? Like, the government's got their whole nose into that one. They're like, oh, don't worry about that farmer over there. This guy's trying to start a nonprofit. But that's where TUGS came from: Talking, Understanding, Growing, and Supporting, because even big ships need little ships sometimes. And that's basically what the core behind my organization is that, you know, we want to break down the stigmas around mental health. And I don't even like calling it mental health anymore. I like calling it mental wellness, because it seems a little more positive. I mean, we all have our things going on mentally that, you know, we don't necessarily want to talk about or whatever. And I want to get rid of that stigma where we can have an open, candid conversation about mental health, like all of the open, candid conversations we were having about COVID back in 2020, you know. But I want us to actually get somewhere and accomplish something with that, and not, you know, not have that anger towards each other or anything, and realize that, you know, if you were and I were sitting here right now and either one of us had a cold or COVID or the flu or whatever, we know that we could, you know, get that. We could, you know, shake hands and end up, you know, bringing that to ourselves. But I mean, you and I have shook hands and given ourselves each other a man hug 15, 20 times, and you're never going to catch my PTSD. You're never going to catch my bipolarism. You're never going to catch my anxiety. You know, why is it though that, like, I mean, you could run into somebody in the store, almost a complete stranger, and, you know, they say, oh, I've been fighting a cold for 3 weeks. And I'm like, I have a cure for that. But by the way, here's a hug, and not even think twice about it. But somebody says, oh, I've got post-traumatic stress, or I've got anxiety, or I've got bipolarism. You're like, oh, dude, don't touch me. I don't want that crap. You know?
Yeah.
So it's one of those, like, that's one of those misconceptions
out
there.
It's a stigma.
It's a very bad stigma. Yes.
And you know, where that comes from, who even knows? It doesn't really matter where it comes from. But the point is that, you know, you have these resources, consistently available, and, you know, are continuing to fund, you know, this kind of situation. And your background as a farmer and as a veteran, you know, those are two populations that, you know, statistically have a problem, or have, I don't know the proper way to say it, but there's a lot of suicide in both of those categories.
So the highest risk suicides right now, if you look at the top 10, you know, farmers, veterans, believe it or not, the number one right now is veterinarians. And I did some, and we'll talk about that here a little bit, but yeah. Let's think about it. Veterinarians are also involved with the farming community.
Sure.
And of course, men, because men don't want to talk about their...
We just like to push it deep right down. And yep. We just like to...
Yep. Yep. Yep, you drown know? It in some ranch and call it a day.
Yeah, you know? Speaking of ranch, before we get to that, you brought in a little pickle ranch.
Dude, that stuff
I've
is
never
so
tried
good.
This.
It is so
this
good.
This is, should I try just go a ahead. Little right now go before ahead. We, you know, just a break, just to some heavy issues here, you know, why not have a little ranch? Yeah.
Is that that's not really delicious?
Good. You know, I'll tell you this much. I like doing pickle beer.
Mm.
I like putting a little pickle juice. Little
yep.
pickle in the beer.
Yep.
Comes from the Bloody Mary, I think.
Yep.
That's some good stuff right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it is.
You want to squirt?
No, I've already had some.
Okay.
Good. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the gift, man.
You
that's
bet.
Very nice.
You bet.
Not a sponsor, but a little pickle ranch here.
I'd recommend everybody try it. If you're having a bad day, this will help. Yeah,
that set the dopamine level spiking right there.
There you go. Yep.
That's an official sponsor of Tugs.
So, man. But no, back to the matter at hand. The challenge with the demographic that we have is that one, you know, men push it, like you said, men will push down their feelings. I mean, God, can't say the F word. And it's interesting. Like when I give my speeches, you could have 200 guys and 20 women and you'll say, guys, say the word feelings. And it's like feelings. Yeah. And you'll say, women, say the word feelings. And it's like, oh my God, they blow the freaking roof off the place, you know?
Right.
And that's not a crack towards women. They just like, they get it. Like it's a natural part of, but we grew up, you know. Oh, it was cool. The other night, you said it in your show, and I was listening to it, and I kind of want to use it. I always say, you know, how many of us in the audience have heard the thing, quit crying or I'll give you something to cry about.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And you talked about your generational difference between your brothers and sisters and you and whatnot. And you know how, you know, the newer generation's like, it's okay to cry about it. And the old generation's like, I'll give you something to cry about.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing of it is like, okay, my cat just died or my dog just died or I just fell and stubbed my toe and broke my chin open, but okay, I'll try to suppress that down. And we created a society of guys and veterans and stuff that, you know, to be viewed as stoic and strong and not vulnerable and stuff. You just got to, you know, you got to put on that strong man's face. You got to put on that, oh, I've got this, you know, I don't have to talk about any of my stuff. Veterans are the same way. And the thing of it is, I got my brother who served 11 years, was over in Fallujah twice. He's now just kind of started to open up about some of his stuff and some of the things that he tells me. And people will say to some veterans, well, you weren't boots on the ground. Like myself, I wasn't boots on the ground, but I watched the Scuds getting blown out of the sky. And I was also on a ship that carried, half of that ship was full of diesel fuel. The other half was full of jet fuel. The rest of it had ammunition on it. And whenever we were out in battle formation, we were like 30 miles away from anything that could protect us.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they hit us and blew us up, there was going to be 20 miles worth of hole, then another 5 miles worth of repercussions, and then another, you know, 5 miles of aftershocks after that part of it. You look at what farmers go through on a regular basis. When you look at the farming community, one, they're busy all the time. Like, it's not like they can just call in sick and say, hey, I'm going to go take a mental health day. A lot of them don't have insurance because they're not good insurance plans for farmers out there. So they're like, well, I'm not going to go. I mean, you can't hardly get them to go in if they're the hands infected and about ready to fall off. And they're like, well, give it another week. I'll throw a little more of peroxide on it and see if that doesn't take care of it. Wrap it up in some duct tape. But I got stuff to do, so I'm going to go out and do that. So you can't get them off of the farm for that side of it. And the other thing is that look at what they go through. Like, let's take this last year, for instance. You know, I said earlier about putting the seed in the ground with blind faith. You know, here's farmers are investing hundreds of thousands of dollars in seed and fertilizer and machinery and stuff to grow a crop so that they can feed all of us. And they're putting it on the ground with no idea what the return is going to be at the end. And you get a year like this where it's been dry a lot. You know, we didn't get a lot of rain. We've kind of hit some drought areas and stuff like that. Guys are starting to take the crop out now and they're like, oh, this is nothing like what we need it to be in order to break even. And then, excuse me, you've got the milk price dropped again. And I've never seen an industry whose prices will fluctuate as much as what, you know, the milk, corn and soybean price does. And the thing of it is that when it fluctuates for the farmer, it doesn't fluctuate for people in town, you know, because we have figured out a way to absorb it. Maybe we don't go to a Brewers game on a Saturday night because we've got to buy some more groceries or whatever. So you figure out a way to do that. Farmers can't go to their local co-op or whatever and say, hey, I want another $3 a bushel for my corn because I'm not making ends meet. And so you've got that stress on it. And then the money starts coming in and you're looking, okay, I got to pay this, but I also need to pay this. Like, where am I going to get that money to pay this? Because I don't have enough on that side of it. So it's this constant vicious cycle. And who do farmers talk to? Other farmers. Yeah, and they're going through the same thing. Yeah. You know, it's even if they're married or if they're in a partnership with their brothers or dad or grandpa or sister or whoever the case may be, you know, when they sit at that business table, Charlie, and they say, hey, Bill, there's not enough money to pay the feed bill this month. Yeah, no kidding. I know that because I balance the checkbook, you know, so they don't have any of that separation from it. And that's one of the things that one of the core values of my group is to find someone that they can talk to that understands their language. Because let's be honest, veterans speak a different language. Farmers speak a different language. You know, if a farmer came into middle of Milwaukee and said, I need, you know, $9 per bushel for an ROI on my soybeans, but right now, you know, fuel is this and my milk price is $13 a hundredweight, and, you know, throwing all of these terms that we know that he just said, I need $9 a bushel, which for every bushel they take out of the field, they get $9 for to get an ROI, which is return on investment, which, you know, and 100 weight for milk, for every 100 pounds of milk that goes out, they're getting $13 for that. The farmer 30 years ago was getting 19 cents of every dollar spent on agricultural product. They're still getting 19 cents of every dollar spent on an agricultural product. Exponentially, though, fuel, price of equipment, price of seed, price of repairs, all that kind of stuff has risen astronomically. And that's why we're in the position that we are, where, you know, a lot of people say, oh, those farmers got those great big piece of equipment and they got this and they get subsidies from the government and all this other stuff. That's kind of a, in my opinion, it's kind of a cloak and dagger type, or cloak and mirror, smoke and mirror type thing to be, well, that's to make it look good so that the consumer feels better about going to the grocery store and having to spend $4 for a loaf of bread.
So, yeah, I mean, it's almost like, you know, you, in some cases, I'm not saying all cases, but like you get into an Uber or something and you're talking to the Uber driver and they're saying that they bought the car from Uber. It's a new car. They got it from Uber, but they got to like pay it off basically, you know? So it's kind of that same thing where like, yeah, money is being generated, but the profit there's not a lot of profit and there's a lot of overhead and there's a lot of stress. If something goes wrong, you know, the bank could take that equipment back just as easily.
Yep.
And so dealing with that on a fairly consistent basis, and that has just, do you see that coming down? Do you see a brighter future for farming?
Well, we've had a couple of good years, you know, and one of the things that I actually liked about COVID was that, you know, we got back in touch with the American farmer. People were buying their meat directly from the farmer. They were, you know, calling and saying, hey, I'll buy a half a steer from you. And, you know, as soon as it got processed, they were buying, they knew where their food was coming from. And you know, they were getting eggs from, you know, the local person that has chickens and, you know, and getting hog or pork and bacon from, you know, the farmer and stuff like that. And, And there was all of a sudden, like, it was like being back in the 70s again, you know, where you actually had neighbors helping neighbors type thing. And then all of a sudden, right back to kind of, well, I can go to the grocery store. It's a lot more convenient. I don't have to buy, you know, 500 pounds, et cetera, et cetera. You know, so we keep losing that. And with the ebbs and flows that go with agriculture, you know, it's kind of the same thing with the attitude too, because, you know, you're looking at it and you're thinking, I mean, it's like, say you're getting, and I don't know what you make, Charlie, and I don't care, but say you get $100,000 in a year for doing 20 shows and I, you know, whatever. And the next year things are a little bit tough and you have to do 30 shows and you still don't quite get to that 100,000. And that's what you need to, because that's what you were expecting. That's what the farmers are going through on a regular basis. Plus with all the uncertainty of what the weather and that kind of stuff is going to bring on top of it too, where they don't have that outlet. And what kind of outlets do we turn to? You know, we turn to alcohol, or we turn to drugs, or we turn to, I hate to say it, we turn to suicide, you know, and, you know, those mental things that are pushing down on us, and the fact that we can't set our own prices, or the fact that we just can't get out of that funk and realize that, yeah, we're in another ebb, but it's going to get better. You know, there might have to be some decisions that are made that, you know, maybe we don't buy that new tractor this year, even though it's what we should do. We'll buy a slightly used one, save some money there, and hope that's going to bring, you know, that circle back around again and stuff too. But you look at it from a, you know, from a 15, 16 year old kid in FFA right now, looking at grandpa and dad and going, man, that's a lot of hard work. You guys don't really make a lot of money, you know. Now they're looking at, well, if I leave the farm and go get a regular job, you know, is that gonna be the detriment to me? Am I gonna get kicked out of the family because now I'm not taking on that tradition on top of it too? So there's so many layers to this that, you know, I mean, honestly, Charlie, we could spend a whole week sitting in these two awesomely green chairs, by the way, and talking about this, because there's so many different multifaceted layers that go along with this.
Like smelt fries and music on the river, we're uniquely Amory. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. 17 more truckloads of humanitarian aid got into Gaza today, with 40 more trucks proposed for tomorrow. That announcement from United Nations World Food Program Director Cindy McCain and Amman Jordan, telling ABC's This Week they have a team on the ground that tracks and traces the supplies to make sure they're going to civilians and not Hamas.
We do the very best we can to make sure that it does go to the right people.
McCain says the situation's dire and the area needs many more truckloads of aid. Meanwhile, Israel's stepping up its attacks on the Gaza Strip. In preparation for the next stage of its war on Hamas, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin saying when the ground incursion starts,
I think you'll see a fight that's characterized by a lot of IEDs, a lot of booby traps, and just really grinding activity going forward.
There's concern that a ground invasion could make Hamas less willing to release hostages. This is ABC News.
I'm getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20.
So am I, because I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine. It can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
UPS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know what's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
So if you're just listening, I'm Charlie Behrens, and this is the Cripescast on Civic Media. How does Tugs help folks? How can they use Tugs to their advantage?
I'm just, you know, now that you said about the environment, I gotta mention this because, you know, I can remember a number of times back when I was first struggling, even before my suicide attempt, you know, the number of people like, oh, you should go outside and take a walk, or you should go take a run. Mm-hmm. Do I look like I run? Like, thank you for making me do something that I don't like to do. And I tell people all the time, if you see me running, catch up, because I'm running for a reason. Like, it's not just because I'm like, oh, I'm going to win $20 at the end of a race and a ribbon and whatever. Nothing against the people that run, because I think it's great. And I'm actually trying to get a little bit better into shape. I realize round is a shape, not the shape I want to be. But you know, so there's multiple things that we're trying to do from a standpoint from Tugs. You know, one of the things that we were super instrumental in is, you know, we did a lot of lobbying to get the National Suicide Hotline changed from a regular 800 number to simply 988.
Yeah.
That was huge for us. You know, because now you can tell people, hey, all you got to do is dial 988, or you can just, you know, text 988. And if you're a veteran, by the way, if you're a veteran listening to this, if you do need 988, by all means, please call it. But press number one after they answer, because that'll get you to someone who's, you know, a veteran specialist who speaks our language, you know, who understands, you know, some of the different challenges that veterans have. My thing is, you know, you said it just a little bit ago, Charlie, and it's kind of rung with me, is that, you know, not having the resources. Here's one of the challenges that has still been going on. You know, you and I talked about it, our first podcast, number 17, Cripescast, in 2020, basically in the height of COVID,
yeah,
with our little fake cow in between us that we found out later was a bull, actually. So I remember the gourd. I remember all of it. Like, it just a flood of emotions. But the thing of it was, is that, so when 988 was implemented, Wisconsin was the number one calling state for quite some time.
Oh, wow.
Put that into perspective. Two, I said during COVID, and I said it on the podcast, and there was actually people that reached out to me and told me I was full of crap. And I said, it's not because of that I'm full of crap. There's other reasons. But I said that, you know, the pandemic that we're facing with COVID right now is nothing compared to the pandemic that we're going to be facing with mental health.
Mm.
And I hit it on the head.
Mm-hmm.
National Suicide Hotline calls went up, you know, 200%, 300%, 400%. You know, even to call a therapist right now, or a psychiatrist, a psychologist to get in, you know, excuse me, basically you're waiting 3-4 months to get in to see somebody. Yeah. If you're doing Better Therapy, which is a great online therapy, I highly recommend them. Same thing. You know, you're not getting, you know, and what we're finding, though, myself is like, since I'm a peer specialist and a mental health coach, I don't do counseling. I don't do therapy or that kind of, you know, I'm kind of like a liaison guy. But one of the things that I've noticed is that a lot of people who are in a, let's call it a situation for lack of a better term, don't necessarily need to talk to a therapist or a psychiatrist or a psychologist. They just need to talk to somebody who actually cares. You know, how many phone conversations have we had since 2020, Charlie, where we've just talked to each other just to say, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. We forgot that. You know, I get up and when I do my presentations, I love doing my presentations to college kids, especially because one of the things that I do is that I have them at the beginning of the presentation, I have them text three people, one of their parents, a sibling if they have one, a best friend, or if they don't have a sibling or best, or if they don't have a sibling, then someone that they haven't texted in a while, and just send them a text. Hey, you're awesome. I hope you have a great day. Talk to you soon. And I'll have the college kids, especially, I have them leave their phones out because moms will call me like, what did you do? You know, or how much money is this going to cost me this time or whatever, you know, but I expound on that and expand on that and go, hey, you know what? You can actually take that same device and you can punch out a whole bunch of numbers like 608-555-1212. And then you can push a little button and then somebody can actually answer on the other end and you can have an actual conversation. And we've lost that. And the reason that that is so important, I know there's people out there right now like, oh my God, I don't want to talk to my parents. They're so weird. You know what, kids, we don't talk to you. No, I'm just kidding. But the thing of it is, it's like, if I send you a text, Charlie, and I say, hey, Charlie, how you doing? And you reply simply, okay. How did you sign? How did you send that? Did it, were you like, okay, or okay.
Yeah.
Now, if I call you and say, hey, Charlie, what's going on? Like, dude, I'm okay.
Then, you know,
Charlie, what's going on? Let's talk, you know, and that is so, you know, I will constantly, you know, one of the things that I tell people all the time is that words have impact. And I don't remember in 2020 if I told the Quick Trip cat guy story. Did I tell you that? Did I tell that story?
Oh, geez. Well, tell it again.
So it's one of my favorite things. First of all, we all know Quick Trip. If you can't, the only thing you probably can't find there is
you did tell it, but tell it again.
So I was in Quick Trip one day, and you know how it is in the Midwest, or especially in areas around here, you know, you walk into Quick Trip or any other local establishment, you're like, hey, how's it going? How's it going? How's it going? Everybody's like, living the dream. Great. Blah, blah, blah. Anyways, I'm in Quick Trip one day in Mineral, and I says this guy, I was getting my kombucha and cause I'm trying to get healthy. And anyway, so I opened the door and I'm like, hey, how's it going? He's like, what do you care? And I'm like, well, I asked you.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, but do you really care? And I'm like, even more now.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, I think if you really want to know, he says, I think my cat's dying. And I'm like, why do you think your cat's dying? Oh, she makes this god awful sound when I feed her and water her. And he's like, it's like, and I'm like, oh, I know that sound. Your cat's got a hairball. And he's like, what are you, a veterinarian? And I'm like, no, but I've had a lot of cats. And he goes, what do I do? What do I do? And I said, it's simple. Go to Walgreens or Fleet Farm. Oh, don't let Parker hear that either, since he's a manager at Farm and Fleet. Go to one of, you know, Walmart or Walgreens or whatever. And he says, you can get this cat hairball remedy. I will warn you, it's the most disgusting thing you're ever going to see or hear in your life. If she doesn't get better in a couple days, then please call your local veterinarian. All right, cool. Thanks. Parted ways. 6 weeks goes by. I'm back in Quick Trip getting glazers that apparently come in a 6-pack, not a 5-pack, Charlie.
You know, it's
whatever. Whatever.
I stole one.
It's your give story. Okay.
Give me a break.
Wait, did you just say you stole one?
No, did I say that?
I'm pretty sure we're going to have to go back.
No.
Yes, can we get that sound bite?
Can we edit that out?
So I'm just about ready to pay for my stuff, and this hand slams down next to me, and I hear this voice go, I'm going to pay for this man's meal. And I turn around and here it's Cat Guy. I still to this day don't know what this guy's name is. And he goes, do you remember me? And I'm like, yeah, you're the guy with Cat. Yeah, we need to talk outside. And all I could think of at that point was like, is this like a last meal? And
yeah.
Do they have security? Do they have security cameras outside? You know, what's my safe word to tell the Quick Trip employees? Anyways,
so we'll
see you next time. Yeah. So tell your folks I'm not good. Anyway, so we go outside and he goes, you were right. He says, my cat had a hairball. And he says, you were right about something else. That is absolutely the grossest thing I have ever witnessed in my life. And of course, we kind of laughed about it. And I was like, you know, hey, that's great. I'm glad to hear that everything turned out fine. He says, no, we're not done. And I said, okay. He says, what you don't know, he says, is I just moved here from the East Coast. He says, and the day I showed up for my new job, they had cut that position and never told me. And I said, okay. And he said, well, I don't know any friends in this tank town. And I'm like, hold on a second. you're at a Quick Trip. Like, we're not a tank town. We're progressive, you know? And he goes, I was hoping to make friends through work and so on and so forth. And he says, and I told myself that very day that I met you, when I left my apartment, if my cat died, I was going to die with my cat.
Oh my gosh.
And I think about it, like, how many people do we talk to on a regular basis? How many people do we stand behind at a store who's taken a little bit long to get their money out because they're older, because maybe they've got something going on, or maybe because it just they're having a rough day, and we're back there and we're like, oh, for crying out loud, why don't you just go through self-checkout or something like that? When that person, when all we'd have to do is just take a little step back and be like, hey, hope your day goes better than you get in your, you know, is there anything I can help with? Or, you know, something like that. And the other thing that we have to also be prepared for, though, is that if we're asking people how they are, we can't always expect them to say that they're living the dream, You know, and I tell people all the time, I would much rather spend an hour or whatever it takes listening to all the things that you've got going on that are causing you angst than to sit and listen to your eulogy for 5 minutes. And I think as a society, we have gotten so wrapped up. I mean, I thought, honestly, the one good thing that would come out of COVID was that we would all be kind and we would all help each other out and we would all, like, try to get on some common ground and you know.
Well, that was wishful thinking, that was,
dude, like, you put a lot of wishy in one hand and a lot of crap in the other and you rub them together, get nothing but wishy crap.
Yeah.
You know, and we've lost that whole thing. And it's interesting. So I, years ago, when we first started texting, I used to send out like 10 texts a day, random texts to random people.
Yep.
That was back when you like would punch the number and you'd be like, ABC.
That's
ABC. And then you're like, I should just call this person. Well, you can't call 10 people at a time. So anyways, I would type out something like, hey, you're awesome. I hope you have a great day. Or you're beautiful, or, you know, you matter, or something like that. And I would send it out and I kept getting back, wow, thank you. Or I needed to hear that. Well, Snapchat comes out. And I know a bunch of you are probably thinking right now, what's a 53-year-old grandfather of 3 1/4? I have one on the way that I'm pretty excited about.
Congrats, by the way.
Found that out the night of your show, actually.
Congratulations. Yep.
You know, father of 2 and 2 bonus kids, you know, what are you doing with Snapchat? First of all, my daughter was drop dead gorgeous, still is. And I don't like boys. And I did find out like 2 years ago that she had 2 Snapchat accounts. There was the dad Snapchat account. And then there was the not dad Snapchat account. But anyways, the thing with Snapchat was like, you know, you can do a video or you can, you know, find some inspirational saying on Facebook or whatever. And so I started doing that and sending them out to people. And it got to be where I would do 10 and then I would add 5 more. And then I did 15 and I'd add 5 more. Today, I sent it out to 395 people.
It's like your own mailing list.
It is. And what's interesting is I always throw some random people in there. There's people now that are like, if I don't do it for like a week, they're like, dude, are you dead? You know, but I think about that. And the response rate back, Charlie, is probably about 75% of people that'll say things like, I needed to hear that. Or how did you know I needed to hear that today? Or I know someone else that needs to hear that. Can I save that and send it? That's, I mean, it's on a social media platform. You do whatever you want, but you have a huge following, Charlie, huge following. What if every one of your people that's listening to this Cripes Cast, plus your staff, were to all send out 10 text messages at the end of this podcast to 10 different people? Think of the lives that are touched with that. Think of the moms that'll be calling their kids and be like, what'd you do?
I'm beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the husbands are another good one too. Especially like when I do in front of farmers, because their wives will call me like, you bought a tractor, didn't you? but my point is that, you know, we've gotten so social media focused that we live social media lives. Why not use that for something just a little bit better?
Right.
You know, and I talked about the 2 Snapchats, and there's a reason that I mentioned that. They're, you know, I deal with a lot of kids. You know, to hear 9, 10, 11 year olds that want to end their lives and you think, what the hell could possibly be going on with a 9, 10, or 11 year old? You know, when I was in high school and I got picked on cause I was small, you know, I had a mile ride on the bus and then all the school picking on me stopped. What happens nowadays? Kids get on their little smartphones, they make up fake profiles, they do all this other stuff, and they continue to bully those people. And adults will say, like, oh, we need to stop this, kids. I'm like, look at yourselves, first of all.
Yeah, no, we should really stop this, you know, as they scroll by their own.
Yeah, you're the same ones that were screaming at people because they didn't wear a mask, or they did wear a mask, or they got the vaccine, or they didn't get the vaccine. Like, oh my God, do you take a look in the mirror? You know, sit down and talk with your kids. I don't know if you don't know what a chair is. Charlie and I are sitting in them, and there's things that have been around forever. And then there's a little table. Put the phones away and have a conversation with your kids. And you know what? The other side of it is maybe look at your kids' phones. Mm. See what they're doing. You're paying for them.
Right.
You know, maybe your child is one of those who's thinking about ending their life. Maybe your child is one of those who's bullying someone else to the point that, and nobody wants to admit that their kid could potentially be a bully, but it's possible. I mean, it's not, it's just, you know, people are like, well, can't talk about that. Mm. Hey, I don't like to talk about being an alcoholic, but I do because I know somebody needs to hear that message. Mm. I don't like to talk about the fact that I tried to end my life, but I need to do that because people need to hear that message.
Right.
I don't like to talk about how when I was first married to, well, when I was married, I've been married three times. When I was married to the mother of my children, I don't like to talk about how I was such a to my stepkid, you know? But I made steps to improve that. And that's the one thing, you know, a lot of times too, the one of the things that frustrates me is people will say, oh, they're just talking about their anxiety or their stuff or their addiction or whatever because they want attention. Dude, if I wanted attention, I got better ways to do it.
Right.
I'm talking about my addiction. My friends are talking about their addiction. We're talking about how hard it is to get to where we need to get to, but we got there and we want other people to join us in that. Plus, we also want other people to be like, oh, I get it now. So when my friend says, yes, we'll go to the bar with you, but I'm not drinking, we will buy him soda all night long and not say, oh, come on, you can just have one
drink. Right.
Oh, come on. There's so many layers that we could fix. And what does that do? Oh, gee, I don't know. Maybe take some of the pressure off of the mental health system that is so overworked and overwhelmed right now. And again, tugs, even big ships need little ships sometimes. Dude, there are days where I just need to talk to my friend Scott. And I'll give you an instance. When we first started Tugs, I sent him a text message one day and I'm like, I hate my lunch. He calls me up right away. What's going on? My lunch sucks. He goes, what are you having? I go, leftovers. He goes, dude, you love leftovers. I'm like, yeah, but it's leftovers 2 days in a row. And he's like, who makes your lunch? I'm like, my wife does. He's like, make your own damn lunch. And I'm thinking to myself, that's not what I wanted to hear. I wanted him to say, oh yeah, your wife's worthless. Can't believe she would subject you to that. You know, no, that's not what I needed to hear. What I needed to hear was, hey, dummy, take some own accountability, do it yourself. However, when the guy that I farmed with ended up getting his first bout of brain cancer and he was on his way to the hospital and we didn't know if he was going to make it, I'm on the other end. I called Scott and all I did was sob on the other end of the phone. And all I heard is on this other voice was Scott saying, I'm here, brother. Mm-hmm. I'm here. For as long as you need me, I'm here. And that is the kind of things that we need to do. And I honest to God, Charlie, and maybe I live in a fantasy land, mamby-pamby, freaking glass house, I don't know. But I think at the end of the day, if we all just start to help each other out again, you know, if you don't want to talk to somebody, send them a text message for crying out loud and just be like, hey, I hope you're having a good day.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, if you're ever in a bad situation, I would hope that you would reach out to me. You know, and there's the other stigma out there that we fight all the time. Well, if I talk to somebody who's suicidal about suicide, they're going to be more likely to die by suicide. No, they're not. That's like a doctor's telling somebody, well, I'd like to talk to you about the cancer you have, but I don't want to talk to you about it because it's going to make you feel bad because you have cancer.
Right.
Let's do something to fix it. I will guarantee you with whatever money is in my bank right now, if somebody would have, which isn't a lot, but I mean, it sounded cool when it actually sounded better in my head. But anyway, I would bet almost anything valuable to me that if someone, when I was going through my 6 weeks of planning before my suicide attempt, if one person would have just said, hey, what's going on with you? We probably wouldn't be having this conversation.
So it's those simple things.
It's very simple. Those
simple things. And, you know, you see it, you have a sense of it, but a lot of times it's easier to just do nothing. And in your opinion, and in your experience, it's just simple communication, a phone call, a text if you can't do that, and just doing something for somebody else.
You know, I talked about that, and somebody asked the question here at one of my presentations not too long ago. They said, well, what if I don't have the time right then? I said, then make an appointment. He's like, what? And this is one of the things that we teach in QPR, which is question, persuade, and refer, which is basically CPR for mental health. I'm an instructor. It's a great little program. It kind of helps you how to help someone who's having a mental health crisis. I said, make an appointment. He's like, what good's that going to do? I said, it's no different when you go to the doctor. If it's not an emergency or they can't get to you right away, put you in a waiting room, but you're still there.
Right.
And then they're going to come back to it. So you tell that person, hey, I know you're going through some stuff right now, and I really want to be there for you. I've got a meeting I got to be at in 10 minutes, but I promise you, I will call you back at 12:30 and we will sit down and we'll have a conversation, or we'll get together at 1 o'clock or whatever the case may be. And we'll sit and we'll talk about what's going on with you. And I will guarantee you 9 times out of 10, that is going to be sufficient. Because now you've just told them that you care enough, that you're going to take time out of your day. And people understand that there's things that come up. You know, they understand that this is kind of brought up or whatever. You know, the other flip side of that is they're like, oh, I really need to talk to somebody right now. Give me your phone. Take their phone. Say, I'm dialing the National Suicide Hotline. These are not people that are going to come grab you and put you in a white hug me coat and drag you off to a mental institution. These are trained volunteers who are going to sit and talk with you.
And then I do wonder, I think a lot of people may wonder about that. Is their number going to go somewhere? Is this totally confidential?
The only time that an operator on 988 will ever call 911 or anything like that is if you multiples threaten, you know, bodily harm or any of that kind of stuff. I've been on their line a few. I've used it myself a few times. I know some people that actually man the line. I've wanted to, but my time constraints, the timing doesn't work out. But it's basically a buffer is what it is. It's kind of the same thing as what we're trying to do with TUGS. And, you know, people ask me, like, what's your end all with TUGS? Like, what's your big goal? My big goal would be like every community to have something that's like TUGS. And I don't care what they call it. They can call it Ships in the Wind, or they can call it, you know, Charlie Barron's is awesome. I don't care what they call the organization, but I would like communities to have the ability to have these organizations where you could get people hooked up with people. And it doesn't have to be your best friend. A lot of times, sometimes our best friends are our worst enemy, because, you know, they're like, oh, it'll get better tomorrow. Or it, you know, that whole positive toxicity, you know, someone who's going to be completely honest and transparent with you, who's going to say, all right, Charlie, make your own lunch. Mm-hmm. Or, dude, brother, I'm with you. Like, whenever you're ready to talk, I'll listen to you. And for those of you too that don't know what toxic positivity is, you know, that's when someone comes up to you and they say, hey, I'm having a really rough day. And you're like, what happened? He's like, oh, I lost my dog. Well, Joe Smith up the road, his wife passed away a week ago. That's a lot worse. Stop doing that.
I'll give you something to cry
about. I'll give you something to cry about. But the whole thing of it is that, and I know people do it with the best intentions. I'm not going to debate that. That's not my point. My point is that people have bad days, you know, and Pam Yonke, bless her. I love that woman to death. You know, she says it all the time. It's one of my favorite taglines that I use myself is, it's not a bad life. It's just a bad day. Mm. You know, and if we can tell somebody, you know what, hey, you are having a bad day. God, that sucks. What can I do to make it better? Mm-hmm. Sometimes all they want to do is vent for 15 minutes, get it out of their system. You might go, I don't have anything. Doesn't matter. I feel better. I got it out. Somebody listen to me. You know, validate that. What is so hard with validating people's feelings? And I use the analogy too. You know, when I watch it on Facebook all the time, and I love my Packer fan friends. I absolutely do. But, you know, there'll be game a couple weeks ago when they were down in the fourth quarter, and everybody's like, we suck, and we're this, and we're that. Winners don't need people cheering for them. I mean, they like it, but they don't need that. The right. People that need the cheering are the ones that are down in the dumps. You know, and you see it. I mean, I've been to Lambeau numbers of times, and Camp Randall, and a few others. And, you know, when the home team is losing, it's kind of quiet.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you need to cheer. It's the same thing with people. When people are down in the dumps, that's when you need to help them. That's when you need to cheer them on. That's when you need to tell them, hey, I know you're struggling right now, but 2 weeks ago, man, that project you did was the best project ever. Or
the Todd Alba Show.
What makes our society great
is that we can believe in something bigger than ourselves. It doesn't matter whether it's a soccer team or whether it's a political movement or whether it's a public school, whether it's a neighborhood PTA, a bake sale. It's about interacting with our friends and neighbors and making our communities better for having come together around a common cause.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local civic media radio station and on the radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.